Welcome to Building My Legacy Podcast. This podcast is designed for leaders and entrepreneurs who want to leave a legacy and will provide strategies that focus upon key elements for legacy creation, determining your desired impact and its benefit, increasing your legacy's reach by engaging key stakeholders, planning, prioritizing, and executing. Here's your host, Dr. Lois Sonstegard.
Welcome, everybody, to today's Building My Legacy podcast. I have with me today Mark Bernstein. Mark is fascinating to me because, you know what, as entrepreneurs, business owners, and consultants to businesses, we think about how do businesses grow? How do they make their money? How do they then do something with that money, right? And Mark has a unique perspective on what's that pyramid? Well, how do we look at the role of making money and how to grow it within business and how to view it? He comes from a legal background. He's an attorney. He also is in insurance. So he deals with the whole aspect of money management from various perspectives. So Mark, welcome to Building My Legacy podcast today. Great to have you.
Thank you, Lois. Good to be here.
So tell me, Mark, you work with manufacturers, you work with entrepreneurs, you work with business owners, and you got started on this whole financial journey because of an experience you had when you were young. You want to share that with the audience? Because I think it's quite impactful.
Sure. My father was an entrepreneur, and he started in the candy business. And he had registered a name called Carousel Chocolates, and he was going to go into the candy business. And somebody came to him and introduced him to the greeting card business. So Carousel Chocolates became Carousel Greeting Cards, and he became a distributor at tri-state area around Philadelphia to all the kind of small corner stores and all that sold greeting cards. And he had a unique product. He had rotating display stands and individually wrapped cards that he would service, and created a niche, and he was sort of the biggest player for that in this area. And the business, you know, of course, I'm the oldest of three boys, so we all worked in the business at various times. Pretty much I worked in business from school. I tell people I started at 4 years old breaking down the boxes in the warehouse for a nickel an hour. So I kind of learned the business literally from the ground up. And it was going good. And he worked very hard. He was working 7 days a week for a lot of the time we were growing up, and was good about, we would take family vacations. And, you know, we had a pretty good middle-class life. And he was just getting to the point in his 50s where he was starting to take it easy a little bit. And he got a call one night, and he asked me to get in the car with him. And I got in the car with him. And on the way, he said, my business is on fire, and we're going to go see what's left of it. It sounded pretty bad. So we got there. The fire was out, but the fire trucks were there, and there was lots of smoke and lots of water, which means all his inventory was destroyed. So, as we're standing there, and he looked very, obviously upset. And one of the things he said, I've been meaning to do this for a long time to review my property casualty insurance coverage, but I'm not even sure I knew what that was at that time. Mm-hmm. He said, but I don't know that I'm going to get enough money to cover the losses here. It's going to be a real problem. And he went through a very difficult time. And as I think back on it, not long after that, his older brother passed away. And we were at the funeral, and we had a walk. And at that time, he said, I don't know if I can continue this. He decided he was going to take a job, move the business from Philadelphia to Kansas City, because that's where he's offered a job. That's where the area that a lot of the big greeting card companies existed at the time. And that was going to be it. And I being a selfish teenager, I basically said, well, I'm not going. I have a life, I have a girlfriend, I have a band, I'm going to college next year. Why would I move now? And I don't know if that was an influence on him or what, but he, in the weeks after that, decided he was not going to take that job. And he decided that he needed to rebuild the business. And what he was going to need to do is triple the size of the business in order to stay in business, because he had to move to bigger space. He couldn't go back into the space that he was in. It had burnt down, and he found a place to rent, and he had to expand his geographic area, and he had to really go back out on the road selling. You know, I'd say he was about 55 years old when this happened. So I watched all of that. And many years later, when I decided I didn't really love the practice of law and I wanted to do something that I really felt helped people, I found this new financial planning field, and there were different ways to enter. And I was kind of confused about which way to go, but it was generally either through the investment business or through the insurance business. And I actually took a position that was supposed to be both, didn't really turn out that way. But, it had me thinking about what's important. And it ended up that I started out with a major life insurance company. And somewhere along the line, I have no idea where it was, I realized there was a great need for planning. And one of the things that occurred to me is what had happened to my dad, and that, you know, if there's any way, I wasn't in the property casualty insurance business, but I felt that it was really important for people to have a foundation, a financial foundation that included insurance to protect assets and their income and things like that. And I also saw the company that I was with, you know, had this financial planning pyramid. And the financial planning pyramid was built on, you know, at the bottom it had, I think, you know, cash, and then it might have had insurance products, and then it might have had money market funds and mutual funds. And it was a time very high interest rates, so money market funds were a huge deal then. The mutual funds, and then bonds and stocks, and, you know, ultimately alternative investments and things like that. But it was all built on product. And as a lawyer, what I had learned how to do pretty well was ask questions and question why things are being done the way they were. And it occurred to me that this doesn't make any sense, because I was out there dealing with people my age. I was like 28 years old, 29 years old. And like, they don't need all these things. You know, it occurred to me, and it was a life insurance company I was working for, and they wanted me to sell them all life insurance. They weren't, you could argue there's a need for it when you're younger and it's less expensive, but it occurred to me that what they really needed to do was protect their income. And that wasn't one of the products that this company specialized in. And I had a lot of pressure to sell not the right products. And it really made me, and then the more I learned about the industry, I saw more and more that almost everybody's coming from a place of biases towards certain products. And that it's sort of the product in mind first. And, you know, there's a lot of lip service given to planning, but I felt that it's to support certain sales. So I ultimately, over time, I've written a book. It's called The Fiscal Therapy Solution 1.0. And I developed my own financial planning pyramid. And it has nothing to do with product. It has to do with goals or life stages or a combination of those. And it looks like at the bottom of the pyramid is protection, then savings and debt, then growth, then income, and then legacy. Because, and if you think about it, especially for the entrepreneurs I work with, that kind of covers all the bases of kind of life stages or stages of business and or the things that they need to talk about in order to, you know, to build a great financial life. So from that perspective, I've worked on building a financial planning process that's agnostic, that's not geared towards selling certain products, and that is, you know, really tries to attempts to solve the issues and the problems facing people reaching their goals and achieving them and maintaining their lifestyles and building their legacies. And then if there's products needed to support that, you talk about that, but that's way down the line. And I find that that's pretty opposite the way most of the industry works. And that's sort of, you know, that's sort of how it's evolved from that, all from that experience, I'd say, when I was a teenager.
It is very opposite of how the industry, it seems like everybody pretty much, right? Even consultants of business. have an agenda. They have something they're selling. Please fit into what I'm selling. And I think actually people have become quite skeptical of almost every piece of advice they get, because there's this sense of you're not really working to help me. You're really working to help yourself, and you're using me on that journey. And so having your approach is a refreshing approach. And, you know, I'm thinking back on the days when I was in grad school, MBA school, other, you know, professional schools, and realizing the one discussion nobody has, think of it, not even in an MBA program, how do you begin to plan your finances? And
absolutely.
And yet we produce people who are supposed to provide the answers, but they haven't learned them themselves. So tell me, you work with entrepreneurs and business owners, manufacturers. When you work with them, how do you engage them in this process? Because there is a lot of fear around money, a lot of fear around what will you do to me if we begin to open up and talk about that. So how do you work with them?
Well, we work with them on a project fee basis, first of all, so that, you know, so it takes, you know, and our ultimate goal is to help them get to where it is they want to go. And we start the conversations on things like, you know, I like to hear their stories, first of all, you know, how they got to where they are, why they're in the business they're in, a little bit of the history of the business. I talk to them a lot about their 3-year vision. I find that's a good number. You know, 10 years is far out in the future. 1 year is, you know, pretty short term. So I found that 3 years is a good number. I'm a product of a program called the Strategic Coach. It was started by a guy named Dan Sullivan. And I heard, and he uses his approach to help solve what's called the success complexity trap. The ceiling of complexity is the right term. And, you know, where business owners get into a certain point where they built the business sort of like my dad did, and he's doing it all himself. And it gets to the point where you're going to explode if you don't either hire other people and start focusing on your unique ability. So his question that he's developed, he calls it the R factor question, is something like, if I were asking you, Lois, it's, you know, if we're sitting here and it's, you know, October 4th, I think it's today, of 2025, it's 3 years from today. And, you know, what would have to happen to you personally, professionally, and financially for you to feel that that last 3-year period was a successful period in your life? And I ask that question, and sometimes I get, you know, a 15-minute answer. Sometimes I get an hour answer. Sometimes we're there 2 hours just talking about that. And that, to me, that's when I get excited, because I know there's some meat there. There's some things that people are trying to accomplish. And, you know, we'll spend more time trying to figure out how we can help them. I also talk to them about the relationship with money, which sounds like a strange question. But, you know, I've had a lot of these conversations during the pandemic. It was a good time to kind of step back and look. I know we talked about it. You did in your business. You started, you know, surveying and asking people questions. So I would start having conversations with people about the relationships with money, and talk to some very, very successful entrepreneurs who had some very strange things to say, such as, you know, I have a hard time ordering the sides in a restaurant because, you know, I was brought up in such a way that I'm just not paying $11 for asparagus or whatever, or I'm, you know, I struggle for weeks and weeks and weeks about the options in the next car I'm going to buy. You know, these people that are worth many multiples of millions that in theory don't have to worry about that, but they're, you know, their values are ingrained in them from a young age and it influences them through their life. Not necessarily that those are bad things, but it's important to know how that influences them in terms of the way they look at money and the way they look at growth and how it might influence their take on their businesses and its future growth, etc. So those are the kind of conversations we have before we're talking about anything close to the specifics of a financial plan, or definitely before anything product related.
So, Mark, as you with people, what do you find are the biggest hindrances to them having a really honest discussion?
That's a great question. Well, number one, I think they've been jaded. And we were talking earlier, and you called it financial abuse. And there are different levels of it. I don't know. As I said, I think there are a lot of people that have great intentions in all aspects of the financial business, but they're in cultures that promote the selling of products. So they may be very well-intentioned, and they may be selling a product that might have even been appropriate when it was bought, but it's not appropriate today. And then there's the other end of it where it's literally financial abuse, where they've been talked into things with fees that, you know, are abusive, and that, you know, the products have nothing to do with what it is they're trying to do. So I think their previous experiences are one thing. I also think that we're a puritanical society when it comes to talking about money. You know, if you've looked at films, you know, I wouldn't say I'm a film buff, but I love to go to the movies with my wife. And, you know, you can hear all about people's lives, their addictions, their sex lives, their love lives, all those kind of things are very frequently shown in movies. But it's very rarely until recently where you see shows like Billions or Succession that they're starting to get into, you know, where people actually talk about their money. You know, the fictional shows, you know, there's always been educational shows and things like that on money, but then it's always theoretical. People aren't really out there talking about their own money. I think we're very, I call it puritanical. I think we're very reserved about that. And a lot of times it's the people's upbringing. I happen to be, because my father was in business and we were all worked in the business, that we actually talked a lot about money. But I find most people didn't really grow up talking about money with their parents or their teachers. As you said, it's not really taught in the schools. So it seems like an odd thing for people to talk about. So I think that's another reason.
So, I mean, I agree. It's a huge issue. It's a larger issue, I think, than we perhaps realize. And I think it's somewhat subtle. So when I think of some of the marketing programs and how we are taught to market, it is also a financial abuse process, right? It's please buy something you really shouldn't be buying because you don't have the money or the means to do it. And I'm going to try and solve a problem for you that this is not the real problem. There's a bigger problem. So it goes on and on. But it's part of this world that we've created. And I think that's part of what creates this skepticism and fear. It's really fear that drives people. Will you do something to me that I will regret? I want to talk a little bit about, so you have this upbringing, you have these attitudes, you've turned this pyramid upside down in a sense by starting with what is it that you need in order to protect yourself? Why did you begin there? I get your father's story, but why would a young entrepreneur, for example, begin at that point on the pyramid?
Well, I think any young person, I mentioned briefly earlier, for instance, your income when you're out of school, and I've unfortunately dealt with this a lot of years, been in the business 35 plus years, and the most common kind of claim you have when it comes to insurance that I've seen with people in business or people that are executives or whatever is disability insurance, because there's something that prevents them from working. And that's something that you may not have control over. You could be in a car accident or some kind of, disease, genetic disease or whatever. And if you're not protecting, and that your ability to create income is your ability to, is really what everything is built from. So that would be an example. That's not the only thing, but that would be an example. Or if you bought your first home and you didn't have, you know, appropriate insurance. I was just on the phone with somebody today because we rented a property in Naples, Florida for next winter. And, you know, as we know, there was a lot of damage in that area this weekend. And you're hearing all over the place that a lot of people couldn't afford or didn't have flood insurance, which means a lot of their damage won't be covered. So, you know, so people could have worked, you know, their whole lives to build their vacation home or their primary home in Fort Myers, Florida, as an example, and now they're wiped out. So those are some of the reasons why. And I don't really consider myself in the insurance business, although that's one of the things we deal with. I don't want to feel like I'm selling that, but I do think, and by the way, insurance isn't always the answer, but some kind of plan for protecting the assets you have. Another big one today is people that are financially independent, let's say affluent, and maybe even wealthy, but not ultra wealthy. This issue of long-term care, a client called me about it today, something he had done many years ago before he met me, and they keep raising the rates on that. And people are concerned about that because that's the one thing that could prevent them from having enough assets. It often gets in the way of having enough for the money to last their lifetime. So those are examples of protection that I think, you know, and again, it might be a sinking fund might be the answer. It may not be insurance, or it might be life insurance that has a provision to use the money for life, long-term care or something else. It's not always like a new product solution, but it is a concern. It's a real concern, and the reason why the products have sprung up, and there have been a lot of abusive products in that industry. But there's a need for it because the cost of that kind of care has grown so tremendously.
I want to just switch for a moment to entrepreneurs, because entrepreneurs, we know, I was just talking with a VC company, and they said that in their business, about 1 out of 9 makes it. And you go, that's not good odds, right?
Right.
But it's real. And how is it that you're working with entrepreneurs to help them create financial strength? Because today, with our economy as it is, it's even a bigger question.
Yeah, good question. So I'll give you an example that I just thought of. It happened to be in the greeting card business. It happened to be the business I grew up in. And it was a company that I knew because my family's business had been the distributor of their cards. And I was friendly with the, not the founder, but the operator, the president, was the next generation of owners in that business. And we would talk about investing and putting money away, he said, I don't need to do that. I can reinvest in my business and I can get, you know, you can't get me 15 to 30% returns guaranteed like I can do. And I said, well, what about when the day comes where you can't make that kind of investment and get that kind of return? He said, well, what are you talking about? And this was an ongoing conversation that happened over years. It didn't happen. And, you know, it was a long process. We worked together for a long time. And at one point I said, well, what about the internet? He said, what about it? I said, you know, there might be a time when people aren't sending as many greeting cards in the mail, you know, and I was just poking at things, you know, I didn't know how true that was going to become.
Of course.
But it was that conversation that I remember he said, okay. I said, look, you're right. You should invest in your business and you should take risks because that's what you do. And it's made you very successful, but don't do it with all the money. Start taking some of the money, setting it aside, investing it. And by the time we were done, and he ultimately sold his business. And by the way, a big part of his plan was the value of the business. By the time he sold his business, there was hardly any value there anymore because that's what's happened in that industry. And so the reserves that we had him start putting away, really that and real estate he bought. He started thinking about what we talked about and he bought real estate for the business and did some other things. So he had a lot of different buckets. So it wasn't all in that one bucket. And that's at the bottom of a lot of the things that we do is like create different buckets. And, you know, and here's another thing. If you're investing in your business, that's private equity. You know, people call it investment private equity, but that's, you're investing in your own business is private equity. Any kind of equity is directly correlated to what happens in the equity markets, the stock markets. So if you're in a business and you're putting all the rest of your money in the stock market, and something big happens like in 2008 or what's happening right now is a really good example. And if the economy, you know, hopefully it doesn't turn the way that many people are afraid it's going to. But if it does, you know, now your eggs are sort of all in the basket that's down. So we talk about non-correlated assets, like what kind of things can you invest in that aren't tied to the same kind of risks, other buckets of money that you establish that can protect you in times like that. So it's those kind of conversations, ultimately.
You know, having multiple buckets, you're absolutely right. So few people talk about that, and yet it's so important. And opening that conversation is hugely important. It's also part of that next step, right? I think many times people go into business. I was just talking with somebody earlier today, and his big thing was, I'm committed to leaving a legacy. So he's committed to putting 50% of whatever he earns back into something, because he's decided there's X number of companies he wants to have grown before he's finished. So there's a part of us that wants to have an impact, right? So how do you talk about the money, creating it so that you have a legacy, and putting a whole plan together so it's not just something you run to at the last minute in your last decade of life or so?
That's a great piece of what we do. When I start talking about that, people early in life, you know, knowing that they may not have any idea at this point, but I want to get them to start thinking about it. Because if you have a business, first of all, what's your end game? What's going to happen at the end? You know, are you going to be succeeded by, family members? Are you going to sell your business? What's your exit strategy? How are you going to monetize the business? And a lot of the people I work with end up having more than enough money. And even if you don't, you know, when you leave a business, when you sell it, I have business owners that through our conversations, I found it's very important to them that their employees not lose their jobs, that they're going to sell. As an example, that's part of the legacy. They say, these people, you know, it's on their backs that we built this business. Many of these people have come with me 30 years, 35 years. You know, I don't want to sell the business and they're suddenly out of a job. So that could result in a number of different things. It could be they stay involved with the business and that's part of the deal, that certain positions are protected. It could be that, you know, they want to carve out a piece of that to provide for many of those people. So there's a lot of different ways you can do it. I always ask about philanthropy to people as well, because obviously that can be a big part of legacy. And, you know, not everyone is necessarily interested in that. They say, you know, we give as each year we give money to various charities. But my question is, you know, one of the things you have to decide, if you have a great net worth, part of that money ultimately will go to the government. Would you rather have it go to the government, or would you rather choose the kind of organizations and causes that you'd like the money to go to? Because you do have that choice, because that's a direct credit against taxes that you pay. So, you know, I have them thinking about, you know, what beyond business, what kind of thumbprint do they want to leave? What kind of legacy do they want to leave, and what that looks like? And that could be a many year process as well. But I love having those conversations. That's one of the things I found most exciting about what I do. I had a client once that we were having an argument, a debate about, he's a real estate developer. I have a number of those. And, you know, I was talking about how it's a little unfair, the great tax breaks that real estate people get sometimes. And he made me think a lot about it. He challenged me on it. He said, how many people do you think benefit from, you know, my business? I said, well, you have like 14 employees. He goes, oh, no, no. So he said, it's at least 1,000. It's the architectural firms I hire. It's the realtors that I keep in commissions. It's the contractors and all their employees that build my buildings. And he went on and on. And after that, I started going to his holiday party where he had all his vendors there. And there were like at least 100 business owners there, you know, that were benefiting. And he said, these tax breaks help create jobs and help create. Now, we could argue about that, you know, tax policy and how that should work. But he made a really good point, is that most entrepreneurs are affecting a lot more people in what they do, whether it's their customers, their suppliers, their vendors, their employees, their, the families of their employees, that kind of thing. So many of them are attuned to the fact that the breadth of the help that they're creating, but they haven't necessarily thought about what's that look like in the form of a legacy when they're gone. So that I get to talk about that, and I find that very exciting to talk to people about that.
You know, it's always exciting when you see a future, right? And talking about legacy is a future perspective. Sure. And I think a lot of times when you're an entrepreneur, you have days get to be long, and sometimes you feel overwhelmed and sometimes hopeless with the challenges that you face. Legacy keeps you focused on the future, I think, and really puts that positive energy back in. Mark, you also talk about personal finance. How does personal and business finance come together? Does it come together for you? How do you reconcile the two so that they're not at odds?
Yes. So as part of our planning team, we have people that look at the businesses as well, as do I, business balance sheet and all that. And we work with a team of advisors. So we're generally working with the accountants for the firm and the attorneys to the extent possible, often their board of directors if they have one, to understand the business well enough to know what the business needs to keep itself healthy. The other side of that is I have seen businesses ruined where the entrepreneur was not kept healthy financially, because then they eventually have to go to the business and raid that, and that eventually causes harm to the business. So your question is almost the answer, which is that there needs to be a balance. The answer as to how you do that, I think, is different in every scenario. But it's something that we pay a lot of attention to. It depends on, some businesses are capital intensive and they need lots of capital, and others not so much. But we want to understand that so we can also understand how to create the financial independence of the entrepreneur so that the business can go on in whatever form they choose to do. So,
Mark, our time is almost up. What have we not talked about that we should have talked about or that the audience ought to know?
Well, you just said something very interesting. You said it's always interesting to talk about the future. So this is a little plug for one of the things that I'm doing, which is I have a program called the Forward Focus Forum. And because to me, that's everything. It's like it's all about the future. And I actually started it in regard to manufacturers. It was a subset of entrepreneurs that I'd worked with for many years. And it sort of had faded away as, China got more involved and businesses were looking at their long-term futures and either selling or dissolving or ending or liquidating or the owners died. And in Philadelphia, as an example, I can tell you there were so many manufacturers and they were going by the wayside. During the pandemic, I was getting interviewed on podcasts and radio shows and things like that. And a lot of the things I was researching as I was going along, and I started to see a big uptick in manufacturing. Many reasons, one of which is the supply chain issue, uptick in manufacturing in the U.S. We saw the problems caused by international supply chains. So as a result of that, small manufacturers are getting stronger. There's a lot of government programs out there now to support manufacturing. And I believe it's going to, labor costs have started to level off between different countries. There's not as big a differential as there was before. So for all those reasons, I got interested in manufacturers again, and I had a few clients left and I knew some other people. I started talking to people about their issues that they were dealing with. And I started this group called the Manufacturers Forward Focus Forum. And it's proved to be it's like a think tank in a confidential type atmosphere where the owners of businesses can get together and discuss the issues they're facing and figure out how to collaborate. I know that's a word that you love, and how to work together to help solve some of the issues they're facing, knowing, and right now in the economy, there are some challenges, but I think they all have a unified feeling that if what they're doing is useful and is a good resource for society, that they have a good future. It's just a matter of how to get there. So I'm having a lot of fun with that. And I'm starting my own radio show / podcast that will probably be called the Founders Forward Forum or Forward Focus. Still working on a name, but founders of businesses, you know, who this has been their baby their whole life, like my father, like me. I'm at that stage of life where I have junior partners and I'm thinking about my own legacy, and the physical therapy and this business is part of my legacy. But I want to get founders together and talk about what does legacy look like? How can they collaborate on joint interests and things like that? And maybe there might be a high net worth forward focus forum, you know, for people that are struggling with different kinds of issues about their legacy, et cetera. So I just wanted to mention that. I think that's a great topic, and I'm seeing it pop up, not just with me, but lots of people around. I know that's a lot of the work that you do as well, focus on the future. So that's sort of a closing thought.
You know, I love that. And for those of you who are listening, we'll have information about Mark and his company's contact information for him in the show notes so you can contact him. And again, his book, Physical Therapy Solution 1.0, 6 Steps to Personal and Business Financial Health, right? Close?
Yep. Available on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com. And the best place is probably to go.
So, and I really appreciate that perspective in your forum, because I think more and more the businesses that are going to thrive are ones who are going to be a part of groups like your forum, where they come together and look at how do we solve a problem that we jointly face. You look at supply chain, no one company is going to solve that one. It takes a group of people working together to solve it. So, Mark, I appreciate very much your perspective and what you've brought to our audience today.
You're a great interviewer, Lois, and I really enjoyed being here with you.
You are so welcome. And for those of you who are with us today on Building My Legacy podcast, thank you for being with us. Remember to see our show notes to know how to contact Mark and visit our website as well at www.buildtomorrow.com with the number 2, and our most recent website, www.startwithcollaboration.com. So thanks, everybody, for your time today.
You've been listening to Building My Legacy podcast with Dr. Lois Sonstegard. To book your appointment with Dr. Sonstegard, visit www.buildtomorrow.com.